we want to ask you these Twitter questions. I guess why don't we go back and forth?
Yeah, we'll just go back and forth.
All right. So I'll start with Maple Fan. I'm guessing are you a Maple fan as well, Ray? Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
Toronto Maple Leaf fan. That's correct.
Yeah. Because you're a Canadian, I understand. Going forward, how does GM plan to work with the unions to keep the company healthy? Will there be no more big pension agreements and that sort of thing? And if so, how will you reward the workers?
During the last set of negotiations with the UAW, they clearly understood the importance of us getting to labor costs competitive to that of the U.S. transplants. Because, frankly, we went through a near-death experience.
U.S. transplants being Toyota, Honda.
Being like the Toyota, Honda, Nissan, an example, are the U.S. transplants that we're basically benchmarking ourselves against. So they understood the importance for us to get our labor costs in line. And through the negotiation process, we actually achieved that. You know, our labor costs, our active labor costs in the United States, based on the most recent UAW contract, effectively approaches that of the U.S. transplants. The other area which was very important was this aspect of retiree health care costs. And you may have heard the word VEBA a lot, which is this employee trust. We were able to negotiate an arrangement with the UAW whereby the funding of this VEBA trust would be through a combination of debt and also equity and preferred stock. And this was very, very important as part of our objective to help reduce the liabilities on our balance sheet. So while a lot of people indicate that the UAW is not cooperative with General Motors or with the American auto and automobile industry, I have to say during the last set of negotiations, they recognized the importance of being competitive, and we were able to achieve pretty historic arrangements with the UAW. Now, going forward, as you pointed out, it's absolutely essential that we remain competitive so that when we get to the next contract and the contract after, we don't get our labor costs out of line. And it's fair to say there's a very strong understanding of that necessity to do that going forward between the UAW and ourselves and with Chrysler. So I do believe that 2009 is a historical year for our industry. I do believe that the UAW is committed in order to ensure that we don't allow our cost structure to get out of line, which would then potentially cause us to get into a situation of entering another near-death experience. So I think it just gets back to this concept that teamwork is important, communications is important, and I actually feel very, very confident that we're probably entering a new phase in terms of our relationship between us and the union. Remember, the UAW is going to be a part owner of the new GM. They're going to own 17.5% of the new General Motors.
Is that the new reward going forward?
Well, therefore there's a huge incentive for the UAW to ensure that the new GM prospers so that the stock price of new GM appreciates, which would then benefit all the workers for the UAW, especially the VEBA trust, which is where retiree health care costs will be paid from.
All right. Another question from Maple Fan. Why does GM care how many dealerships are out there? Does it financially affect you for a dealership to exist?
I've actually received a lot of this similar type of question, saying, Ray, why by having extra dealers, it doesn't cost General Motors any money. Well, in fact, it does, because to support dealers, we actually have to provide support in the form of information technology systems. We provide a lot of support in terms of dealer incentives, salespeople incentives. We actually have a large workforce that actually goes out and visits dealers and supports the dealers, whether it be on the showroom floor or in the parts area. But probably one of our greatest costs of low-performing dealers is the fact that we spend a lot more money than is necessary in the form of incentives. We provide incentives, both what I call visible incentives and invisible incentives, to the marketplace. invisible incentives are incentives that we provide to the dealer in order to help them sell vehicles. There's an expression, the chain is as strong as its weakest link. It's the same issue when you think about dealers and incentives. We actually have to spend incentives in order to support the weakest dealers in the network, in order to allow them to effectively sell vehicles. By reducing the size of the network and making sure that the remaining dealers are the strong dealers, dealers who can sell vehicles based upon the attributes of the product as opposed to simply selling on the basis of the deal, this actually will reduce how much we have to spend on incentives in terms of our overall marketing strategy. And secondly, it actually helps wean customers off the concept that to buy General Motors products should be based only on incentives. We know we have dealers who can sell, for example, a Chevy Malibu based upon the attributes of Chevy Malibu. You know, the styling of the vehicle, the ride and handling of the vehicle, the comfort of the vehicle. But we also know there are dealers who sell the Chevy Malibu by putting on a couple thousand bucks on under the hood. And so you get a sense as to who we prefer and what the potential cost to General Motors is of having low-performing dealers.
Thanks.
One important point to make is even after all this restructuring of the dealer network, we will still have 3,600 GM dealers around the country. 3,600. We are still going to be the largest dealer network in the United States and still three times the size of, for example, the Toyota network in the United States. So, you know, our customers will be able to find GM dealers around the country. They will be able to get their vehicles serviced at GM dealers around the country. While it's a dramatic reduction in terms of the number of dealers, it's unfortunately something which we have to do. And for the new General Motors to be viable and prosperous, this is the type of tough actions that we must execute.
Great. Ian Abernathy asks, will GM take direction from the government on how to design vehicles apart from the standard legislative requirements? And I assume he means here, energy efficiency or other priorities of the administration that might not otherwise be priorities for GM.
Well, actually, in terms of fuel economy, safety, it's something which the government has the responsibility to provide standards, not just for General Motors, but for the entire industry. So I expect that the administration will continue to play an active role in terms of ensuring that vehicles meet minimum fuel economy standards, minimum safety standards. Recently, they've announced a new set of rules regarding a national standard in terms of fuel economy, which General Motors and the other automakers supported. I think the advantage of, one of the big advantages of the most recent experience with the U.S. government is that we really now have an effective dialogue with the administration on the key issues regarding our industry. And so we hope that we can continue to maintain this dialogue, show the administration, show the various agencies within the administration regarding some of the pros and cons of various initiatives, and therefore arrive at standards, arrive at regulations that are a win-win for both the American public as well as the viability of our industry here in the United States.
All right. Ian Abernathy says, when does GM need to start selling more cars before they run out of money? How long will reserves last at current sales rate?
We're going to start selling cars today. I mean, General Motors is open for business, despite the perception that we're in Chapter 11. We are selling cars. The month of May was actually a pretty decent month. We've asked for enough liquidity or cash as part of the bankruptcy process in order to handle us through the downturn. So I do not anticipate us coming back to the government again for money.
Great. Papini, what should GM have done differently with that original bailout money? I think someone at the White House said that the original $4 billion was, I think the word was, wasted.
Actually, no. I actually negotiated in December the first tranche of the government funding. It was actually $13.4 billion that we negotiated on December 31st. By the way, on New Year's Eve, I signed the agreement at 4:08 p.m., it's a clear understanding with the administration when we signed that agreement that that cash would take us through the end of the first quarter of 2009. They want us to – they want to bridge us to the first quarter so that we can then negotiate an arrangement with the new administration in terms of how we were going to affect the restructuring plan of the company.
All right. Star D, how will bankruptcy affect plans for the Chevy Volt and other innovative projects?
No change. From our perspective, the Volt's on track for a launch at the end of 2010. And all the other products that we're planning to launch, they're on track. We're not changing any of those plans.
Greg Mihalko asks, why did this new GM reinvention ad I saw on a Stanley Cup commercial last night not happen years earlier?
Well, we've had different types of commercials going on to the airwaves, talking about General Motors. For example, last year when we celebrated our 100th anniversary, we had a series of campaigns. We just felt that right now, as we go through the bankruptcy process, as we emerge from the new company, we felt that the reinvention theme was important. We felt that it was important to emphasize that this is the new General Motors. It is a new type of company. And we want to assure customers that effectively, as we go through this bankruptcy process, that they should not be concerned about the warranties, the guarantees. They should not be concerned about service. Hence the reinvention theme. I love the expression, you know, we're entering chapter one. We're not talking about chapter 11 here. We're talking about we're entering chapter one. We want that to resonate with our customers.
How about the reinvention itself? I feel like I've spent most of my conscious life hearing that GM was on the ropes.
Well, again, I emphasize, when you go through a near-death experience, it does force you to change. And I can assure you, the new General Motors is going to be a very, very different company. You know, the fact that we're willing to talk about being a smaller company is revolutionary. General Motors, we never talked about that. But now we're talking about being a smaller company, but a more focused company. You know, for us to go from 8 brands to 4 brands in a year, that's a pretty dramatic change. So I think that from our perspective, we don't want to be the largest company in the world. We want to be the best company in the world, and that's where our focus right now is, to be the best company in the world with the best products and servicing the customers in the best way possible.
Jason in New Jersey asks, GM brands are frankly outdated. Caddy, Chevy, Buick, will there be any new brands in GM's future or just a continuation?
This is probably one of our biggest challenges, is changing consumer perception. When you actually start driving some of our Chevy products, our Cadillac products, our Buick products, our GMC products, these are actually very modern vehicles, very stylish vehicles. They're actually very young vehicles. But probably one of our biggest challenges is to change this perception. And the only way we can change it is one customer at a time. We have to earn the trust of the customer. We need to talk more about our brands. We need to talk more about the products. We need to get people into our vehicles, driving our vehicles, so that they can change the perceptions of our products.
Any new brands coming down the pipe?
Well, we have nameplates. Again, there's going to be 4 core brands of General Motors. Again, the 4 core brands being Chevrolet, Cadillac, GMC, and Buick. Beneath these brands, we will have models or nameplates, and you know, one of the most anxiously anticipated launches will be next year when we launch the new Chevrolet Cruze, which is our new small car on the Chevy brand. Very, very exciting product. It's going to appeal significantly to the younger folks in this nation here.
MSGNet asks, and I know we're running out of time, so we'll skip a bunch of them. MSGNet asks, what actions have enabled Ford to survive while GM and Chrysler have collapsed?
Ford was able to effectively mortgage their assets back in 2000, I think it was about 2006, and raise a lot of cash. I think it was over $20 billion of cash they were able to raise through this financing. They did a smart job. They actually were able to get the cash before the credit markets all seized up. And so, therefore, they have a large cash balance in it when they entered the downturn. And hence, they did not have to go to the U.S. government in order to borrow. So that was a very, very smart move by Ford. You know, from their perspective, they're going through the recession just like we are. They have some good products. I mean, I have to admit, they have some very good products as well. The big challenge for all of us right now is how long will this recession last? And, you know, the longer the U.S. recession lasts, the more there'll be cash burn in terms of our entire industry. And that, I think that's the biggest question. So if you ask me what would be my greatest wish right now, my greatest wish would be for the U.S. economy to recover. If the U.S. economy recovers, I think all of us will be able to do better. And the monies that we borrowed from the U.S. government, we will be able to repay quicker to the U.S. taxpayers.
From your lips to God's ears, man.
You want to ask the last
one? Yeah, last one. Here we go. Eric B. Davies, how will you compete on costs and structure at GM to handle a financial storm? I don't think you'll be bailed out again if you fail.
Well, you're absolutely right. We view this as the last opportunity. That's the reason why when we went through the bankruptcy process, when we filed the papers on Monday and asked for a certain amount of cash, this amount was designed to handle a downturn. We wanted to take a more conservative stance in terms of how much we needed. This number was analyzed by both the Canadian governments and the U.S. governments. They felt that it was appropriate for us to cover really a downside as we go through the bankruptcy process. So we feel pretty confident that this is all we need. Our job right now is to execute the plan. We want to get through the bankruptcy process quickly, the so-called 363 sale process quickly, emerge in 60 to 90 days, execute our plan, and make sure the new General Motors is delivering the promises that we're making to the U.S. taxpayers.
Great. Ray, I want to thank you so much. This has been a really fascinating and good conversation, and I appreciate your openness to this conversation. I feel like for us here at Planet Money, there are so many businesses, banks, institutions that have been affected by the that have been bailed out by us taxpayers, and I'm having trouble thinking of anyone who's been as open to answering questions and talking candidly as you. So I want to thank you very much for that.
I appreciate and really enjoyed it, Malur. Have a nice day.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Bye.